Welcome to Flatiron Church Online. One of our favorite parts of the online community is we know you are watching from all over the place. Maybe like me, and you're gonna jump in an ice bath right before you watch service, right where you're at in your house. Listen, we got some really cool things coming for you, but before I give you some of those announcements and some stuff that you should be paying attention for, I'm just gonna hop in the ice bath real quick. You cool with that? Because I'm not. Not really sure whose idea this was. Oh my God. Okay. Coming up right around the corner is Easter. We'd love for you to join us physically in person at any of our five locations. You can go to our website. You can check any dates and times. Those are right around the corner. And I am in a tub, and I do want to let you know that on that same weekend, we're doing baptisms. So baptism's coming up. We want to invite you and your families to be there, be baptized. But if you can't make the trip, and maybe you do an at-home baptism, we want to see those videos. So if you wouldn't mind recording those, sending us this way to us, we want to integrate those into our service so that we can celebrate with you. We're so excited. And we're in the middle of our series, Death to Religion. Hope you enjoy today. And hopefully, you're in a little bit of a warmer situation than I am. All right, peace out.
All right, Flatirons, how are we doing? We good? Good, you sleepy? Just a little bit, yeah. This is like my favorite day of the year. I love today, because I love that it's brighter later now. It's better for me, my craziness. I just love it. I get tired at this time of the year. I'm always sick of like staring at the moon and wishing upon stars at like 3 p.m. So I love today. Even if you're sleepy, I'm pumped you're here. So welcome. Welcome to the series that we've called Death to Religion. If you're like new here or you missed last week and you're like, that makes me uncomfortable, or like, is this sacrilegious? First of all, I'd recommend that later today, jump online, go back and watch Jim teach last weekend while he sets this thing up. It'll make way more sense. But I know you can't do that till later, so let me try to quickly explain. Here's what this series is all about. All right, so this series is taking us right up to Easter weekend. And so what we're doing is we're looking at the life of Jesus in his last few weeks leading up to the cross. That just makes sense, right? And so we're looking at the last few moments of Jesus' life. We're told in Luke that there's this moment where Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem. That's what Luke says. And so in other words, there's this moment near the end of Jesus' life where he just decides it's go time. Right? Go time. He starts locking over the dominoes that are going to eventually lead to his own execution. And in these moments from when Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem, right up until the moment where he dies on the cross, Jesus is laser focused. All right, he's just a man on a mission. He's got his eyes on the prize, and the prize is the cross. Okay, because after all, like the primary goal of Jesus' life was never to be a great teacher, even though he was absolutely the best. It was never to do a bunch of miracles, even though he did a ton of miracles. It wasn't even to show us what the good life looks like, even though he did. Instead, his primary goal had always been his death, his sacrifice on the cross. And because he gets so laser-focused and mission-minded in these last few weeks of his life, his teachings and his parables get pretty intense. For me, it kind of reminds me of like when every boy growing up learns how to use a magnifying glass to focus the sunlight so that you can burn leaves and pop ants and all that cool stuff. It's like Jesus gets so focused that the result is intensity. Right, his words start to burn up the way that we thought life was supposed to work. They start to set fire to the way we thought religion was supposed to look. Thus, the name of the series. And today's no different than last week. We're gonna look at some words from Jesus that set fire to the way that many of us, myself absolutely included, are probably living our lives. But before we jump into that, I wanna tell you a quick story, okay? You're probably gonna be like, dude, you're venting. And honestly, I might be a little bit. I promise the story has to do with what we're talking about. But ever since I can remember, like ever since I was a little kid, I've been the guy who plays worst case scenario way too quickly. I know some of you are like that too. Like, for example, when I was a kid, if my parents left the house and they're like, we'll be home at 8. Well, if 8:30 rolls around and they're not there yet, my mind is just like, well, I'm an orphan now. Right, you know, like I need to reread The Boxcar Children to figure out like what comes next. And I'm pushing 40 and I still operate this way. If my wife Allie goes out with friends and she's like, I'll be home by 10. If 10:30 rolls around, I'm checking her dot. That's what my kids call it, checking the dot. That's where you know, on the iPhone you can share location or whatever. It's never a good thing because it always takes the phone a little while to accurately find her. you know? So it's like I pull up that location thing and I'm like, you're in a field behind Chili's? Like, what? Who drug you to this place? Like, what's wrong with you? And then a second later, the dot's like, what? No, oh, you're just in Chili's, where you said you would be. You're safe. The point, though, I'm getting at is that last week, this whole, like, worst-case scenario thing hit an all-time high, and here's what happened. So Allie leaves to go pick up groceries, all right? I'm home with the kids. 20 minutes later, she calls me. The first words out of her mouth are, I've been in a car wreck, all right? This is the phone call that I'm, like, basically always dreading. I'm immediately up. I've got my car keys. I'm getting the kids into the car. And of course, the first words out of my mouth are you okay, right? She's very quick to tell me. She's like, I'm fine. It was just a minor fender bender, but I'm calling you because this guy that I got in a wreck with is being like really stubborn. He's being really mean and unreasonable. I gave him my insurance card, but he's not giving me his. Like, he's absolutely refusing to give me his insurance. Okay, this point, I'm already on my way. I'm already driving. And then she tells me, he's just being a jerk. And then I hear him in the background go, no, I'm not being a jerk. Says it like a jerk. And then he goes, I'm just upset. And she goes, well, sir, I'm also upset. You just hit my car. And then he goes, no. And then the phone hangs up. Yeah. So I'm, of course, in worst case scenario. Right, I'm speeding towards her location. I'm texting her. She's not texting back. I'm calling her. She's not picking up. You know, I'm starting to think, who is this dude? Is he violent? Did she just get in a car wreck with the worst possible person? Is she safe? At what point do I call the police, right? All these thoughts are going through my head. And I don't know, I'm assuming some of you have been in a similar situation where it's like you've heard people say, I was seeing red, and then you do for the first time. Like, I was in this state of, I was like in this altered state of being where I didn't know what I was gonna do next, but it probably wasn't gonna be good, right? I was furious. I was like shaking with rage. I just knew that if I show up to this scene and this dude has so much as laid a finger on Allie, then it's like, dude, I'm 5'7", but I don't care if this guy's Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you know? I'm throwing fists. I'm not stopping until one of us needs scraped off the pavement. I mean, I was physically shaking with fear and with anger, with rage. Thankfully, the silence didn't last long, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. She finally calls me back. She's like, hey, sorry I hung up on you. And I'm like, we'll talk about that later. But she's like, hey, I just decided to like get in the car and lock the doors. This guy's just being really uncooperative, unreasonable. I called the police just to have an officer come and handle it. I'm like, great, stay in the car and stay on the phone with me until the police show up. By the time I get there, the police are already there. This dude's on the other side of the parking lot. Allie's over here talking with the officer. I make a beeline for Allie. I obviously had a look on my face because the officer turns, sees me, doesn't say hello, just goes, oh, yep, no confrontation with that man over there, sir. I was like, that's kind of why I drove here, but okay. I'm making a short story long, so here's where I'm trying to get at. It's over. The whole thing's done and over with, right? The officer handled it fantastically. Like, you know, we filed our claim. It's totally over. The reason I'm telling the story is because it's totally over. And as you can probably tell, I'm still mad, right? I'm still angry. Like, I kind of hope I bump into this guy in the grocery store and so I can give him a piece of my mind, right? Doesn't help that he wasn't Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I think I got a shot here. So, and I'm not trying to glorify it. I'm not proud of it. I'm just, the point of the story is I'm still mad about it. And so for me, and I'm sure you feel this way too, there's some areas of my life where I can see that I've grown and matured ever since I started a relationship with Jesus. But then there's other areas, most of the time it feels like more areas, where it just feels like, yeah, I've not really grown there yet. Like, I've not matured there yet. And one of the areas for me is it's really hard for me to let go of times when I feel like I was truly wronged, or especially when I feel like someone I love was truly wronged. Okay, so I'm not talking about like, you know, someone had a bad day or someone made a really stupid decision. I'm talking about when someone went out of their way to hurt someone I love. Like, I have a hard time getting over it. And so in this case, this guy just chose to be rude. Right? He just chose to scream and yell at my wife. He refused to take responsibility. He tried to make her feel stupid. He tried to blame her for the wreck, even though the officer was like, dude, this thing's your fault, right? And so he just chose to wrong my wife, and I struggle to forgive people like that. And that's just a dude who got in a fender bender with my wife. So I'll let you imagine the darkness in my heart when it comes to people who have really, really wronged me or really, really wronged the people I love. And you think less of me now. I'm totally fine with that. You should have lowered the bar to begin with. But the reason I share this is because some of us in this room, that's not your thing. Okay, that's the area where you've grown and matured, or it's something that you never struggled with to begin with. But for others of us in this room, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know what it's like to feel wronged. You know what it's like to dwell on it every single day. You know what it's like to wish that that person gets what they deserve, to spiral into anger and bitterness. My question today is just, is it okay to feel like that sometimes? Not all the time. I know all the time would be bad. Is it okay to feel that way sometimes, just with certain situations and certain people? Like, are there certain people where we're justified to be able to look at them and say, I want nothing to do with you. You're a trash human being. Get out of my life. I don't forgive you. Is that okay in just certain situations? Today, Jesus is going to address that, okay? Over the next 20 minutes, if you're anything like me, it's going to go up and down. You're going to get angry at some points with Jesus, and then you're going to be like, oh, okay, now I get it. And then you're going to be like, oh, no, I don't think I get it. I'm angry again. And you're going to wonder if Jesus could possibly mean what he's about to say. All I can say is if you just push through the whole thing, it's not going to get less intense, but I think at the end, you're going to see how this way of life could lead to freedom. So all I can ask is that you just kind of push through with me to the very end. All right, we're going to be in Matthew chapter 18. We're going to start reading in verse 21. So if you want to get a head start in your Bibles, that's a cool noise, flipping pages. It's kind of new. I'm looking at Jim, not a random person. Lots of people flipping pages. Nice. You brought your Bibles. So 18:21, Matthew 18:21. Before we read our story, some context, okay? Right before what we're going to read together today, right before that, Jesus explains what we're supposed to do when we've been sinned against. So he tells us how to handle situations where we've been wronged. And he gives four clear-cut steps, okay? For me, a lot of times in Jesus's teachings, I feel like his teachings are sometimes abstract, or it's like he's just teaching like a big general like principle that I've got to live my life by. This is one of the few moments where he goes like Bible Belt pastor, and he's like, here are your four clear-cut application steps after you leave. He does that right here. All right, you should go read this later today. For now, I'll just kind of summarize it for us. But Jesus says that when you've been wronged, when someone hurts you, you are supposed to do four things in order. Okay, the first thing you're supposed to do is handle it with that person. Go talk to that person just one-on-one. See if you can reconcile that relationship, just the two of you. Okay, if that doesn't work, you move to step two. Step two is you bring two or three friends along with you to talk to the person who hurt you. Okay, he says, if that doesn't heal things, move to step three. And step three is you bring your whole church with you. And he's talking to like how his future church is gonna handle confrontation. These were much smaller communities. So he's not like in our case saying like, hey, bring 12,000 people to the person's house. This would be more like bring your small group with you. Bring your tight-knit community of friends with you to try to handle it, to try to solve it. He says, if that doesn't work, now you can move to the fourth and final step, which is essentially you can excommunicate this person from your life and from your community. He says you don't have to continue being hurt by someone who just remains totally unrepentant. Okay, if you're anything like me, I'm like, boom, that's okay, that's all I was looking for. Right? So like someone's done wrong to me. It's like, sure, there's technically a few things I'm supposed to do. I got to go talk to them and then bring my friends and bring my small group. But ultimately what I'm looking for is there's this moment where I'm finally allowed to look at this other person and say, take a hike, right? Get out of my life. I do not forgive you anymore. Feels like there's this moment where I'm let off the hook with forgiveness, right? Peter, one of Jesus' disciples, he's there. This is the guy that Jim talked about a lot last week. Peter's there, and I love Peter because Peter's a mess, and his heart's in the right place. And I identify with him a lot because I know I'm a mess, and I like to think that my heart's in the right place sometimes. And so Peter's there. He's obviously kind of thinking like I'm thinking, and so he asks a question, and this is where we're picking up today in Matthew 18, 21. Remember, right before this, Jesus says, here's what you do when someone has sinned against you, and then this happens. Then Peter came to Jesus, and he asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Up to seven times? Now, time out, because there's a lot going on, and we'll miss it if we don't have the context. So according to rabbinic law, which is the religious law of Jesus's day, the maximum required forgiveness was three times. You had to forgive someone three times. That was the maximum. Again, not according to the Old Testament, according to tacked on religious laws of Jesus's day. So if you wanted to try to be a good Jewish person, for example, if one day your neighbor walks out of his house and he cusses you out, you gotta forgive him. All right, if on day two he walks out of the house, calls your daughter ugly, you're like, gotta forgive you, right? Day three he comes out, steals your sheep, oh, gotta forgive him. But if on day four he comes out and eggs your house, it's like all bets are off at this point, right? You only had to forgive him three times. And so if you wanna be a saint, go ahead and try and forgive him a fourth time. But if you're anything like me, you're gonna do what I would do, you're gonna do what you would do, which is, it's time for payback now. You already forgave him three times. So you get to now walk out of the house, call him an ugly you know what, throw a pie in his face, kick his dog, whatever, like you earned it, go for it, right? And I'm exaggerating, but only kind of like a little bit. This was the rabbinic law. You have to forgive someone three times. After that, you're totally off the hook with forgiveness, and you can call this person an enemy now. Okay, back to Peter. Jesus had just said, here's what you do when someone's wronged you. There's three things you do, and if none of those work, then the fourth one is you can distance yourself from that person. And to Peter, this sounds like a variation of the rabbinic law that he grew up with. He's like, yeah, we've heard that one before. You know, forgive someone three times and then kick them to the curb. And so when Peter asks his question, he's being a total teacher's pet. He's being annoying, right? Because he's going, okay, Jesus, yeah, heard. Good word, Jesus, I hear you. Forgive someone three times and then kick them to the curb. We know that one. But then he's like Jim talked about last week, he's like, but I'm your rock, you know? Like, I'm your special guy. So should I forgive someone like more? Should I forgive someone seven times? He's being a turd, basically. He's just being annoying. So he's being this teacher's pet, and he's totally misunderstanding Jesus. And so Jesus clarifies himself to Peter, and this is where things start to get a little intense. Look at this. Jesus answered Peter. He's like, buddy, I tell you, you're not required to forgive someone even seven times, but instead 77 times. And this would have shocked the crowd. Okay, it would have wiped Peter's holier-than-thou smirk off of his face, and it should still shock us in 2024, because the point isn't the number, okay? He's not saying literally 77 times, okay? We're not allowed to go like, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you, and then like 77, ha, kick rocks, I hate you, you know? That's not what he's saying. The point is the exaggeration of the number. And so when Peter says you have to forgive someone, when Jesus says you have to forgive someone 77 times, what he's saying is my people are commanded to forgive others indefinitely, over and over and over again without end. And again, if you're anything like me, you're going, no, that just can't be what he's saying. Right? You're going like, Ben, you love to pause for context, cultural context. So like, what's the context we're missing here, right? Because I've been hurt and Jesus can't possibly be saying that I have to forgive that person, right? Right? And why? Why would this be a good way to live our lives in the first place? I mean, some of us right now, totally understandably, are thinking to ourselves, this actually sounds like a foolish and unsafe way to live my life. So what is going on here? And obviously Jesus is getting a lot of the like wide-eyed stares that I'm getting right now. And so he decided to illustrate this radical forgiveness with a parable. And a parable is a fictional story that teaches us a spiritual truth. And we're gonna read through this parable together right now. Again, it's intense, but let's just buckle up and let's get through it. Here we go. So remember, Jesus just said you got to forgive people indefinitely. He goes, therefore, based on what I just said about forgiveness, the kingdom of heaven, my kingdom, is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. Okay, as he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. Okay, without getting too sidetracked, a lot of scholars think a talent represents what a first century person would have made in a year. So this guy owes 10,000 years worth of his annual salary. Jesus is exaggerating again. He's basically saying it's impossible for this guy to pay the debt back. Okay, next. Since he was not able to pay, of course, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. So he's not gonna make all his money back, but maybe he'll make some money back. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I'll pay back everything. And the servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. So this man, the servant, goes, please, you know, just give me more time. I'm gonna pay you back. And then the master becomes filled with compassion for his servant. And he looks at him, he says, buddy, it's literally impossible for you to pay me back. So how about instead, I just cancel your debt and you go scot-free? Like, go in peace. And we like this parable right now. So far, because we're making all the connections. We're figuring out who the king is and we're the servant who's been forgiven. And so we like this so far until the next part. Look at this. When the servant, our guy, went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. He grabbed him, began to choke him and said, pay back what you owe me. Now, a denarii is about the amount that a first century person would make in one day. So to do all the math for us, he owes 100 denarii and 10,000 talents. But do all the math and kind of use modern dollars. Our guy, he just got a debt of $130 million straight up canceled. And the first thing he does is he chokes out one of his buddies for owing him $5,000. Okay, next, his fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I'll pay you back. The exact same plea for mercy that our guy just gave the king, the master. But our guy refused. Instead, he went off, had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. Now, there were people around watching, and when the other servants saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told their master everything that had happened. And then the master called the servant, our guy, in, and he said, you wicked servant, I canceled that debt of yours just because you begged me to. I did it. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? And then in anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. And then for all of us, myself included, who are hoping that Jesus tames this story down when he explains his parable, he ends up doing the opposite. He confirms exactly what we're hoping he's not saying. He ends by saying, this is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart. It's intense. And what's happening is a death to a form of religion. Okay, remember the religion from Peter's day said you gotta forgive someone 3 times, but then after that, dude, you're no Superman. You're off the hook. They can be your enemy now. Peter tried to one-up it by saying, I'll forgive someone 7 times before I stop forgiving them. And then we do the same thing. It's like, you know, you fool me once, you know, shame on me, that whole thing. Like, you can hurt me like a couple times, but then after that, like, I'm done forgiving you. We do the same thing. In this story, Jesus just said, no, that's religion. That's rules. This is the kind of religion, it's like a false security blanket that we wrap ourselves in and we call it faith. This is the kind of religion where we distort the kingdom of heaven to assume that we always get what we want from Jesus and everyone else always gets what they deserve. This is the form of religion where we say to ourselves, like, I'm so thankful I get to go to heaven and I'm so thankful that that one person over there goes to hell. And Jesus puts this kind of religion to death. In the story that we looked at today, he's saying death to hoping people get what they deserve, death to holding a grudge, and ultimately death to non-forgiveness, because Jesus says, my people, People who are in a relationship with me will forgive absolutely everyone over and over again without end because my people will understand the extent to which they were first forgiven. But still, why? I'm hung up on that question. Why would we live this way? And this is why we're talking about this stuff leading up to Easter, because the truth is, this is foolish advice from Jesus if he doesn't march his way to a cross. Right? This, none of what he says even makes any sense if he doesn't end up dying on a cross. Here's what I mean. Jim talked about this last week. It's like the harsh reality of the kingdom of heaven is that the wages of sin is death. Payment must be made for our sinfulness, and the payment is death and eternal separation from our God. That's just the truth. Who could possibly pay that wage? Who could pay all those wages? Like, think about it. An entire history of humanity, tens of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands, I don't care however long you think we've been around here, that much time of like individual personal pain and global atrocities, who could possibly pay the wages of all that sin? There's only two options. Either each of us has to individually pay for our own through our own death and eternal separation, or the only other option I see is like a literally infinite being has to pay for all of it, which is exactly what Jesus did on the cross for us. And so when Jesus tells this parable, he's like foreshadowing his death. He's getting blank stares from his disciples. They're going like, I don't wanna live this way. But Jesus is going, this is all gonna make sense in a couple weeks once I die on the cross. This is when the puzzle pieces are gonna finally fit together. And so he's foreshadowing his death, and he's basically saying like, you have a debt that's absolutely impossible for you to pay back, short of your own death and eternal separation from a God who loves you. And so, out of my desire for grace and mercy and peace and shalom, and out of my desire to make all things whole and right again and to have a relationship with you, like out of my great love for you, I'll cancel your debt. You don't have to pay those wages. I'll eat the cost myself, and I will pay the wages for you. And in this parable, Jesus is saying, I did all that for you. And you won't forgive a guy for having a bad day when he got into a fender bender with your wife. He's going, things obviously aren't lining up in your mind right now. It's intense. I'm also a skeptical person. I don't just believe anything. It took me a long, hard road to believe in Jesus. Like, I don't just believe stuff. I'm very skeptical. And so I have a couple skeptical questions right now. I'm sure some of you have the same questions. My first question is Jesus saying that we got to earn our own forgiveness? Well, no. But if you've been listening, a lot of you are like, dude, that's exactly what that parable sounds like. Well, the answer is no for a few reasons. First of all, if that were true, all of us are going to hell. Second of all, it doesn't line up with the breadth of what is taught us about grace throughout the entire Bible. It doesn't even line up with Jesus' own parable, which begins with a man who cannot repay a debt and the master out of his kindness and compassion forgives it. So Jesus isn't saying we've got to earn our own forgiveness. Instead though, I think he's saying something that in my opinion is even more intense, a little more drastic. I think Jesus is saying like, hey, listen to the people who follow him. If forgiveness isn't at the very least the goal of your life, like it was the goal of mine, if it's not the road that you're on with your relationships, like it's the road that I'm on, then maybe you don't know very much about me to begin with. My second skeptic's question is this. Is Jesus saying that we need to stay in unhealthy and unsafe relationships? Again, no. This is why context is so important. Right before this, Jesus told us what we're supposed to do when someone has wronged us. And he says, at the beginning, the goal is reconciliation, to heal things. But he also says, like, in the most drastic cases, we're allowed to remove harmful, unrepentant people from our lives. We don't have to continue an intimate relationship with someone who just keeps hurting us. But it's just the truth. The other side of that coin is he says that, and then he follows it with a parable that essentially says, in the most drastic cases, you don't have to stay in relationship with the people who hurt you, but you do still have to forgive them. And everything in me wants to give us a pass, right? I want to find a loophole. I was squirming in my seat, literally writing this thing, because everything in me right now wants to go, okay, you know, take a breath, okay? So there are certain situations where if you've been hurt in a certain way or hurt to a certain degree, then it's understandable and permissible for you to not forgive that other person. I want to say that so badly, I can't, because it's the opposite of what Jesus just taught us right now. I mean, the closest I can get, and I can say this in integrity with the best of my current knowledge of Jesus' life and teachings and my relationship with him, I think the closest I can get is to say Jesus understands that there are going to be some situations and some people that hurt so badly, it might take you the rest of your life and into eternity to work towards forgiveness with that person. It's just that he's still saying, I do command you to work towards that with that person. That's what he's, I command you toward forgiveness. He goes, that is the road you're gonna walk if you wanna walk a road with me. He goes, my people don't walk the road of anger and bitterness and resentment. My people walk the road of mercy and forgiveness because that is my road. And you forgive 77 times over and over and over again without end. And it's heavy, right? And it's intense. And I think it's, as a human being, I think it's totally natural right now for us to just kind of hyper-focus on the seemingly impossible nature of what Jesus just commanded us to do, which is to forgive indefinitely. And so we can get hung up on that. And so I want to end right now by trying to remind us of something that I think we forget a lot when it comes to forgiveness. And what I think we forget a lot is that forgiveness really might be one of the more self-serving things that Jesus ever commands us to do. Here's what I mean by that. And for some of you, and you know who you are, try your best right now, okay, to kind of take the bitterness and anger you have towards someone and kind of just push it to the side to just hear me out, okay? But here's what I mean. It's like we can get so hung up on whether or not another person deserves or has earned forgiveness, that we can lose sight of and forget to see that forgiveness is basically a gift that you hand yourself. I mean, in the best case scenarios, it's a gift for everyone, right? Because the relationship is healed. But even in the most drastic scenarios where the relationship is never gonna be the same again, you're never gonna be reconciled, or where it might even be foolish or unsafe for you to maintain a relationship, even in the worst case scenarios, forgiveness is still always at least a gift that you give yourself. And that's because of the truth that we see on the cross. It is the truth that Christians all over the world are preparing to celebrate together in a few weeks. It is the truth that forgiveness is all about freedom. It's always been all about freedom. And when Jesus commands us to forgive even our enemies, like even though it sounds backwards at first, he's commanding us towards freedom. And that's because here's the truth. On the surface, okay, not when you dig deep, but on the surface, being unforgiving feels like similar to justice. Okay, justice is you have been wronged and you want things to be made right again. And the way our brains work is, well, that means that person needs to get what they deserve. And true spiritual justice is a good and holy thing to desire. Our hearts should desire that. But then we twist it to where our unforgiveness feels very similar to justice, and so we call it righteousness. This is why we call it righteous anger. The problem, though, is that kind of justice, spiritual justice, doesn't belong to us. It never has, never will. That belongs to our King. Hebrews tells us, for we know him, God, who said, it's mine to avenge, I will repay. And again, the Lord will judge his people, not us. God's going, listen, the thing that you're thinking about right now, the thing that was wrong, that was done to you, like, I will avenge it. I will repay it. Either the person who hurt you will pay for it themselves, or they will one day fall at the foot of the cross and I'll eat the cost myself like I did for you. But the one thing that will not happen is a lack of justice for the wrong that was done to you. But that kind of spiritual justice, way above our pay grade, doesn't belong to us. But then we try to convince ourselves that being unforgiving is similar to justice and it's righteous. But again, in reality, and this is a reality that I believe we all know deep down in our hearts, even though it's just kind of hard to admit. But in reality, we're really the only ones paying for our non-forgiveness. You know, if you've lived through it, like it's a prison that we get trapped in and it locks God out. Like it's no coincidence that Jesus ends his parable of the unforgiving servant with that guy being tortured in a prison, because non-forgiveness is a thing that locks you up and tortures your spirit. It's like our anger and our bitterness are eroding our own hearts and minds and souls from the inside out. We know it. We don't know what else to do, right? We've been wronged and we need things to be made right. We want to do something about it. And some of us, we've been hurt so badly that we're not thinking clearly anymore. And so we just think that the only thing to do about it is just get angry and get bitter and pray that something terrible happens to the person who hurt us. And then meanwhile, Jesus is going, no, that's not the only option. When someone has done wrong to you, the other option, the one that my people will choose, is the option of forgiveness. Jesus commands us to forgive, and I'm convinced 9 times out of 10, it has way less to do with the person we're forgiving and way more to do with our own personal freedom. How could that be true? It's because of this. Here's another tough truth. We might as well cover one more while we're doing all these other ones, right? Here's a tough truth. The people who hurt us, typically, they're not waking up every single day burdened by that moment. If they were, they would have tried to make things right by now. Right? They're not waking up every, we are the ones waking up every morning, throwing that burden over our shoulder and walking around with it all day. We are the ones defining ourselves by the pain of our past. We are the ones who keep reliving those moments over and over again because we are the ones crippled by anger and bitterness. And so we are the ones who are just struggling to see any source of beauty in our present day or any source of hope in our future. We are the ones imprisoned by our non-forgiveness. The people who hurt us, they already took something from us that cannot be undone and cannot be made right again. Why would we let them take more from us? By continuing to just focus and let that moment dominate and control our thoughts and emotions, why wouldn't we at least try to choose freedom through forgiveness like Jesus taught? And some of us are going, yeah, but dude, I'm not ever going to get an apology from that person. And that sucks. I've been there. But at the same time, you don't need it. Forgiveness doesn't require an apology. Sometimes it doesn't even require you to talk to the other person. Sometimes it would be unwise to talk to the other person. Others of us are going, yeah, but if I forgive them, that's the same as saying that what they did was okay. No, I don't leave here thinking I'm saying that or thinking that Jesus is saying that. Not saying that. What has happened to you was, always will be wrong. Forgiveness isn't about glossing the things over in your past. Forgiveness isn't about calling a bad thing good and permissible. Instead, forgiveness is about saying, even though what you did to me was wrong, I will not let it continue to dominate my spirit. I will not remain imprisoned by it. And so I forgive you. Forgiveness is about choosing to stand tall again, even under the weight of your own pain. And forgiveness is about peeling, as hard as it is, your eyes away from the past so that you can see the hope of your future again and the blessings you have around you right now. Forgiveness is about dropping anger and bitterness so that you have two free hands to pick up compassion and hope again for the first time in a really long time. And in my experience, the few times I've been able to get to that kind of forgiveness, it's only possible after I look at Jesus and go, because of the way he forgave me, it's the only way I can forgive you. Because of the debt he canceled for me, it's the only way I'm willing to cancel your debt. And because of what he did for me on a cross, I just no longer need anything to be free, including an apology from you. Jesus is saying death to non-forgiveness, and he's saying that it leads to a life of freedom because forgiveness has always been all about freedom. And so I'm about to pray. Okay, and then after that, we're not gonna sing another song together. You can just bounce if you want. But anytime I teach something like this, I always feel tender toward everyone sitting in the room. Because I know the truth that there's some of us, after this, you'll go grab lunch, you'll go about your day, and that'll be that, right? But then for others of us, it's like, this is bringing up something you kind of didn't want to think about today, and it's bringing up a lot of pain, and I feel tender for you. And so I just want to say that when I pray and say amen, you can leave if you want, but you also don't have to, okay? We're not going to lock these doors. We got a whole other hour until our next service. So if you just want some time to kind of recoup and recover before you pick up your kids, do that in here. Or if you want some time to just talk to Jesus and be honest with him, whether you're telling him, thank you for what you've done for me, or if you need to have an honest conversation going like, I'm really angry that you're telling me to forgive this person, do that in here. And then we've got a prayer team that comes up right here at the front of the stage after every service. They're awesome people. Their passion is to hear what you're walking through so that they can pray with you. If you wanna do that up here. But you can leave after this, but you don't have to, is what I'm saying. And before I pray, I just want to say, I encourage you, and I'm preaching to myself just as much as I'm preaching to you. So I encourage us to test Jesus in this and maybe just try to see if forgiveness might lead to freedom, because nothing else has yet. And so may we have the humility to truly grasp what Jesus did for us. May we have the courage to face the really hard moments in our lives. And as backwards as it might sound, may we have the strength to forgive the people who caused them. Let's pray. God, if I'm honest, I do not like that you said this. I like that you did it for me. I don't like that you told me to do it. And I'm just being honest. I love that you forgave me. I love that you forgive the people I love. But then you tell me to go and be like you in this way. And I just don't want to, frankly. But at the end of the day, like, you are my king. You are my Lord. I trust you. And so for those of us who trust you, but we just couldn't possibly see how this could be good for our lives, could you give us, I don't know what we need. I don't know if we need courage or strength or if we just need to make like a blind leap of faith in this, but God, could you give us what each of us individually need to turn, and whether we face the person in person or whether we just do it in our hearts, and like, could you give us what we need in order to forgive the people who have wronged us? It's so backwards sounding. It's so backwards from what our culture says we should do and what our hearts say we should do initially. So God, give us what we need to face the people who have hurt us and forgive them. God, remind us that we only do that because of the way that you first forgave us. God, for anyone in the room who's feeling pain or burdened right now, God, move in that person's heart. Show them your compassion. Remind them that you didn't bail on them. Remind them that you love them and you're gonna walk every single day with them. God, give us what we need to try to put your words into practice so that we can live a life of freedom, the life that you promised. God, I love you. I love this church. Thank you for this church. Thank you for these people. Ultimately, God, thank you for your son, Jesus Christ. And it's in his holy name that I pray, amen. All right, Flatirons prayer team up front. If you got questions about Jesus or questions about Flatirons, Discover table over by the info desk. Love ya. See you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to Flatirons Church Online. We hope you enjoyed it today and that God moved in a mighty way. We want to let you know that we have brand new content coming out all the time, including live streams every single Sunday. And if you don't want to miss out on any of that content, make sure that you hit the subscribe button. We also want to let you know that if you believe in what Flatirons is doing, and that's to reach a lost and broken world, there's a give button that you can hit to take next steps there. Well, we hope you enjoyed it, and we can't wait to see you next time.